At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
Hey everybody, it's Nicole Byer here with some hot takes from Wayfair. A cozy corduroy sectional from Wayfair? Yeah, that's a hot take. Go on and add it to your cart and take it. A pink glam nightstand from Wayfair? Scalding hot take. Take it before I do. A mid-century modern cabinet from Wayfair that doubles as a wine bar? Do I have to say it? It's a hot take. Get it at Wayfair.com and enjoy that free shipping too.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
Dreaming of blissful summer days and creamy popsicles? Capture sun-drenched memories with the Orange Vanilla Dream Hydration Multiplier from Liquid IV. Just one stick and 16 ounces of water can help hydrate you better than water alone. Live your summer dream with Liquid IV. Tear, pour, live more. Go to liquidiv.com and get 20% off your first order with code INDULGE20 at checkout.
This is Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi. Here now, Tony Bruschi.
By the time Angela Craig was declared brain dead, her husband was already booking flights for his mistress. If that line doesn't set the tone, well, nothing will. In this next part of our conversation with Eric Faddis about James Craig and the murder trial, we're stepping out of the lab and into the mine, because if prosecutors built a case around cyanide, tetrahydrolazine, that's the stuff in the Visine, and Amazon carts full of Visine, this part of the story is built on lust, ego, and a man who allegedly thought he could fake his way out of a murder charge with burner phones and bad handwriting. James Craig allegedly wasn't just cheating. He wasn't just broke. He was, if the state's theory holds, plotting. Not just how to kill, but how to explain it away later. That's what makes his next chapter so important. It's not just about motive, it's about mindset. From sugar baby texts that feel ripped out of a Netflix thriller to jailhouse letters and fake cheater or character, I'm thinking cheater on this because he is, and character scripts and assassination instructions. This is where Craig stops being the grieving husband and becomes the guy allegedly writing fan fiction about his own alibi. But how do jurors process that? Does it help the state's case or muddy it with too many outlandish twists? And what kind of man tells his own daughter to make a deep fake video of her dead mom? Eric Faddis is back with us. He's been sitting in the courtroom watching this unfold in real time. He's seen the jurors' faces. He's read the body language. And he's here to help us understand what this all means, not just for the verdict, but for the bigger story that we're watching play out. Because it isn't just another murder trial. It's a post-mortem on a life that was unraveling in real time and a cover-up that may have done more to prove guilt than conceal it. I know the daughter read the request deepfake letter in court as well. We talked about that a little bit earlier in the week, but let's talk a little bit more about that. How has that been playing to the jury with the daughters being on the stand? And obviously, he's not only asked another inmate to try and kill for him, to try and set up fake witnesses and write the letter and all that. He's also asked his daughter to be a part of this and create like a deep fake video of mom making a suicide note video, which is not something that anyone can really do that easily.
Totally. And I think I've got to imagine the jury was rather offended by that, because what it means, not only is he allegedly enlisting his own daughter in the cover-up of the murder of her mother, but on top of that, he's exposing his own daughter to possible criminal liability for fabricating false evidence. And that just goes a little more to the kind of the misplaced confidence of this guy to think that his daughter could, you know, who was, I think, 20 or 21, could create some kind of convincing deepfake video, send it to authorities, and somehow absolve him from this horrible murder saga that he appears to have gotten himself into.
And also, we're doing the personality trait thing and trying to figure out what the hell's going on here. What's the recipe behind this, man? It plays back into the, okay, well, if he's got a personality disorder, again, all these are traits of that way of thinking. And once you kind of figure out, okay, well, here's the recipe, and you know what's in the cake. And he's the cake. Very not delicious one, to say it lightly. I've never compared anyone to a cake.
Yeah, cake has some arsenic.
It's a bad cake. Don't put arsenic in the cake. It's like when you do salt instead of sugar, and it just doesn't work out well. I'm going to talk about this. You've now heard, you know, so many things about the mistresses, the money problems, every lie. And in any case, obviously, he doesn't need to, you know, show the motive. The state does. We don't need a motive, but it certainly helps at the end of the day. What is the strongest motive that's been laid bare here by the prosecution thus far?
They've centered on sort of dual motives, two factors that they believe caused James Craig to kill his wife. One is the adultery, which apparently had been going on for some time, sounds like years. And there was an event of adultery, I believe in December 2022, so about 3 months before his wife is killed. So that is a big one, including that James Craig was continuing to text and correspond with his mistress while his wife was in the hospital dying. On top of that, he was having serious money issues. He had a former bankruptcy in 2020 or so, and he had partnered with Dr. Ryan Redfern, another dentist, and things were not going well financially. And so a lot of people thought, hey, this is his way to sort of start anew, do away with those troubles in his life and not have to deal with them in sort of a new life that he wanted to create for himself.
There's undertones of Peterson in this, of Lacey Peterson and Scott Peterson, the affair, the I'm going to send you a picture of my wife dying. I mean, it's reminiscent of Scott. I'm watching the stars and the fireworks go off while, you know, he's not searching for his wife. That sort of weird dichotomy of a relationship there. Sugar Baby added another term to the trial this week. Why don't you explain to us what Sugar Baby means and how it applies to this case and what Sugar Baby had to say about Mr. Craig?
Yeah. So, you know, Sugar Baby is essentially someone who involves themselves in a kind of transactional relationship with someone else in order to get benefits, usually monetary benefits, from that person. And it's sort of an agreed upon arrangement where both sides are cool with it. That's rather more common than people think, I believe. In fact, there are apps where you can become a sugar baby and find sugar daddies. And so in our modern culture, that's something that continues to come up. And there is evidence of kind of a transactional sort of relationship between James Craig and his mistress and potentially with other subjects of his infidelity.
We used to just call it prostitution. But now let's call it's sugar. Like, it's the same. I mean, it's monetary. Yeah. I mean, it's like an agreed upon thing. But I guess we found a way of normalizing it in some way, shape, or form and making websites out of it and making it a lifestyle. Let me ask you about this. How important is it that in this timeline that he was actually with the mistresses or the sugar babies or whoever he was with was not his wife while the wife was dying? How much is that? How crucial is that to the jury when they're trying to examine this guy? I mean, take the murder out of it. I mean, just you add this piece into it. I mean, these are damning things that people will, you know, indict on just on character, even if your crime is harder to prove.
I think there are two ways that plays into the case. The first way is that it just shows kind of a callous indifference to the health state of his wife. You know, if he didn't do this, you would imagine the husband would be much more concerned and not, you know, overly focused on some new romantic fling, but instead wanting, his wife and loved one, even if they had a falling out, to live, you know. And then secondly, I think that it undercuts his argument that he wanted to still be with the wife. The defense has sort of pressed this by saying, hey, in the text messages, he's saying he still wants to be married. You know, things are not over. And that doesn't sound like someone who wants to kill their wife. However, when you compare that to the fact that he is so interested and kind of obsessed with this mistress during this specific time frame while his wife is dying, it makes it seem like, no, he probably isn't so into repairing his marriage. And maybe it suggests that he's actually wanting that to happen, meaning his wife dying.
I mean, it's trying to make sense out of crazy at the end of the day with somebody like this, because we're looking for sensical solutions, so sensical answers, how we would handle it, how a healthy brain would handle something like this. And we're not dealing with a healthy brain. He probably wanted both. He wanted his wife and he wanted the sugar baby too. And, you know, in every other candy in the machine, he wanted the Mambas. He wanted the Charleston Chew and the sugar baby. And there's the sugar daddy, too, which is a larger piece of caramel, which if you really chew on it, it gets stuck in your teeth and it's not that fun. I'm not a big fan of those. They're delicious, but not a candy I would choose if given the opportunity. That's a public service message. But yeah, it's do you think there's anything left here? Based on what you've seen in court, obviously the prosecution has now rested. The defense is having their turn to go and take a run at this. Is there any path here for them to introduce reasonable doubt? Do you think they can trump what has been brought by the prosecution?
Well, it's tough. The case got even worse for James Craig yesterday, where it's my understanding that someone connected to the wife, it might have been her sister, testified that there was a prior drugging incident during which, allegedly, James Craig wanted to commit suicide. Angela Craig didn't want him to do that, so he drugged her so she could not prevent him from doing this. We have a history of drugging in this drugging homicide case. That being said, I think the defense is going to focus on Angela Craig's mental state at the time. She was going through a rough patch. You know, people go through rough patches. James Craig alleges that there was a prior opioid overdose attempt by Angela Craig. We haven't heard a ton of evidence about that. Might come out in defense's case in chief. They're going to have to angle towards her being suicidal, but who would poison themselves over the course of weeks during mass suffering? It's not a good way to go out.
Now, none of it makes a whole lot of sense at the end of the day. This, I mean, and we're talking about probably two fairly unhealthy minds here at the end. I mean, I can't imagine either of them. I mean, maybe one of them started out healthy and the other one wasn't. Maybe they both started out unhealthy. I don't know. But after being married to this man for how many years, I can't imagine anyone's in a good place. Just trying to, you know, navigate the eggshells of the invisible floor that they were living in. Just a messed up case. When a man sitting in jail starts naming witnesses who don't exist, assigning them code names and offering dental work as payment to rewrite the past, you're not just dealing with bad judgment. You're dealing with a person who's not trying to escape the system. He's trying to outright it. And this may be James Craig's fatal mistake. You can lie to your mistress. You can lie to your wife. Hell, you can lie to your own kid. But when you lie in ink, when you hand the state a literal playbook for your defense, it's kind of hard to walk that one back. This half of the trial has been pure theater, but the kind that makes jurors lean forward, not roll their eyes, because for all the spectacle, what we've actually seen is something rare. A case where the post-crime behavior may be more incriminating than the crime itself. That's what makes this part so dangerous for the defense. It's not just that Craig allegedly poisoned his wife, it's that he kept trying to edit the narrative after death, and every time he did, he left another breadcrumb straight to his cell block. And let's be real, juries are human. They have to separate emotion from fact, drama from evidence. That's a heavy lift. You've just been handed a handwritten murder plot tucked under a bunk bed in jail. But we didn't hear much of, and this half is a real narrative. No concrete evidence that Angela Craig was suicidal. No trail of depression. No note, no digital trace suggesting she wanted to die. And certainly nothing that would justify the state's theory that she was killed slowly, intentionally, by someone who knew exactly how to make it look like a mystery. That's still one big question looming, though. Will James Craig take the stand? And if he does, can he survive his own story? That's where we're headed next. Closings, strategy, and the final psychology battleground, the jury. Because if the prosecution nailed the science and the defense fumbles the story, what's left is pure narrative warfare. And in a case like this, the story the jury believes might be the one that decides who walks out and who doesn't. Give me your thoughts on the case in the comment section on YouTube. If you've not already done that and you're there, be sure to find us on YouTube. Just search Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi. Do the same wherever you're downloading podcasts as well, whatever platform that is. You can listen to us on the go. You can watch us on YouTube. We're everywhere you want to be, just like Visa used to say. And press subscribe. We do appreciate that, but leave comments, most importantly. Until next time, I'm Tony Bruschi. Thanks for watching.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast.